You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition. We have two big stories in the news. One from the United Kingdom. They had an election today. We don't know the final results. The polls are closed, though. And it looks like, based on exit polls, that the Prime Minister still has the most votes in terms of her party, but she doesn't have a majority. There are 650 seats in Parliament. You need 326 is the magic number to have a majority, which is, you know, half plus one. And it looks like, based on the polls, either she has 314 or 316. So she looks like she's 10, 12, 13 short. Now, you got to keep in mind that polls are polls, and exit polls have been wrong, both in this country and that country. But they tend to be a little bit more accurate. So on Monday's show, because I don't believe the studio is open tomorrow. We're on a summer schedule, and Friday, unless someone comes in, the studio will be closed. So I won't be giving a Friday show. At least that's my expectation right now. So it'll be Monday at the earliest before, and by then, most of you will know the results that are interested in this. The Labour Party gained, which was somewhat of a surprise. I think these terrorist attacks may have hurt the Prime Minister. I didn't think it. I thought it would actually help. And Jeremy Corbyn, who is the Labour, it would be the far leftist, most left Prime Minister they would ever elect if he won. It doesn't look like he's going to even come close, which is good, I think, for Great Britain. It looks like they'll have about 240, maybe as high as 266, but they're not going to get a majority. And even if they... Now, what happens? You have what's called a hung parliament, and in a parliamentary system, remember, it was her idea to call this early election, and because she didn't win, she might very well resign and someone else would become prime minister. That's a conservative. We'll see. That's her decision to make. And remember, these are early results. We really have to wait till the ballots are counted. Polls are polls. And we saw what happened in the U.S. election, where Hillary Clinton, everyone was saying, not me, but everyone in the news, big lie media was saying, well, she has it. You can take it to the bank. She's the next president. They were almost celebrating before, and lo and behold, Donald Trump not only wins, he needed 270 electoral college votes and got 304, which was a mandate. Be careful about polls, and I have no expertise on British election, but this would be a surprise. It was really expected that she not only would maintain a majority, but probably would pick up some more seats. Well, that apparently is not going to happen. But it's still, she could squeak it out and hold her majority. But you're going to have to wait to later this evening before we really know that. And that's about as much as I want to say on that story. I think this is a disappointment for President Trump, because I think he has developed a relationship, a good working relationship with the Prime Minister. And I certainly hope that the Conservative Party would win. I definitely, the Labor Party is very much a far, the remains of the Labor Party are very much a far leftist party. And I don't want to get into the Scotland situation. There, the party there that wants to be independent, but they would be a factor. So it looks like we'll have a hung parliament. In other words, there's no majority, even with a coalition with the other parties, because several of them won't form that coalition. Now, what's the big story? I listened to this, listened to the entire hearing today. James Comey appeared in the Senate, was questioned by the senators. I want to play his opening statement. I can't play the full because it went nearly 3 hours. It was approaching 3 hours. I did listen to it, and I thought it was interesting, but I kept saying to myself, aren't there more important things that we should be discussing or hearing about? And the reason I say that, I'm very much, whoever the president is, I don't care if they're Democrat, Republican, or a new party, the president of the United States should pick his team. And if he has lost confidence with one or more of the people that stay, and the FBI director has Congress set it up so he has a 10-year term. However, he serves at the pleasure of the president. So if he loses the confidence of the president can fire the FBI director for any reason. He doesn't have to give why at all. And that's what you need to understand. If he doesn't trust, that's another way to say it. If he doesn't trust James Comey or is upset with the way he's handling the FBI, it's entirely appropriate for the president to fire him. And I thought, I was somewhat surprised that he didn't fire him at the beginning. And someone asked Comey the question, if Hillary Clinton was elected, did you expect to be fired? You know, I think the honest answer is, but he didn't answer this. He didn't answer it this way. Is yeah, I thought if Hillary Clinton won, I was out of here, and I think he would have been out of here. And I think in retrospect, I think President Trump regrets not firing him at day one. Now that's all water under the bridge, and like I said, it's up to the president. If initially he had enough confidence in him that he let him stay, fine. I think when you're dealing with President Trump, he makes decisions fairly quickly. That's both good and bad. Now, if you have enough information, it's good. But if you don't have enough information and you jump conclusions, you can be wrong and regret it. So I don't think it was a good day for James Comey. I really don't. Now, he did prepare his testimony and 7 pages that I forgot to pick up. I didn't bring it in my briefcase. So, and I suggest you read the 7 pages. You can Google it, and it's rather concise, to the point. And the reason James Comey gave the senators that is to have everyone on the same page. And I thought it was an excellent idea, and it saved a lot of time. So let's listen to excerpts. And I want to play, first of all, his taking the oath.
Director Comey, and I appreciate your willingness to appear before the committee today. And more importantly, I thank you for your dedicated service and leadership to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Your appearance today speaks to the trust we have built over the years. And I'm looking forward to a very open and candid discussion today. I'd like to remind my colleagues that we will reconvene in closed session at 1 p.m. today, and I ask that you reserve for that venue any questions that might get into classified information.
Now, I want to interject here, and this is important. Usually the morning sessions, like this one, is open to the public, and it does not get into anything that has to deal with classified information, so you don't really know what's really going on. You're only getting half the story, and that drives me crazy. And later, I'll interject a comment that apparently this committee knows information pertaining to Hillary Clinton and his investigation of the emails that apparently the general public doesn't know. I don't know what he's referring to, and I don't even want to speculate. I think the American people are owed as a complete explanation as possible. And I understand if it's classified information, you don't want to get into it. But a lot of the answers today by Comey, I just don't want to touch upon it because it's either classified or it's under investigation. Well, that's nice, but leaves the public, leaves me and a lot of other people. What's going on here? Let's continue.
The director has been very gracious with his time, but the vice chairman and I have worked out a very specific timeline for his commitment to be on the Hill, so we will do everything we can to meet that agreement. The Senate Select Committee on Intelligence exists to certify for the other 85 members of the United States Senate and the American people that the intelligence community is operating lawfully and has the necessary authorities and tools to accomplish its mission and keep America safe. Part of our mission, beyond the oversight we continue to provide to the intelligence community and its activities, is to investigate Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. elections. The committee's work continues. This hearing represents part of that effort. Jim, allegations have been swirling in the press for the last several weeks, and today's your opportunity to set the record straight. Yesterday, I read with interest your statement for the record, and I think it provides some helpful details surrounding your interactions with the president. It clearly lays out your understanding of those discussions, actions you took following each conversation, and your state of mind. I very much appreciate your candor, and I think it's helpful as we work through to determine the ultimate truth behind possible Russian interference in the 2016 elections. Your statement also provides texture and context to your interactions with the president from your vantage point and outlines a strained relationship. The American people need to hear your side of the story, just as they need to hear the president's descriptions of events. These interactions also highlight the importance of the committee's ongoing investigation. Our experienced staff is interviewing all relevant parties and some of the most sensitive intelligence in our country's possession. We will establish the facts, separate from rampant speculation, and lay them out for the American people to make their own judgment. Only then will we, as a nation, be able to move forward and to put this episode to rest. There are several outstanding issues not addressed in your statement that I hope you'll clear up for the American people today. Did the president's request for loyalty, your impression, that the one-on-one dinner of January 27th was, and I quote, at least in part, an effort to create some sort of patronage relationship, or his March 30th phone call asking what you could do to lift the cloud of Russia investigation in any way, alter your approach or the FBI's investigation into General Flynn, or the broader investigation into Russia and possible links to the campaign? In your opinion, did potential Russian efforts to establish links with individuals in the Trump orbit rise to the level we could define as collusion, or was it a counterintelligence concern? There's been a significant public speculation about your decision making related to the Clinton email investigation. Why did you decide publicly announce FBI's recommendations that the Department of Justice not pursue criminal charges? You have described it as a choice between a bad decision and a worse decision. The American people need to understand the facts behind your action. This committee is uniquely suited to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 elections. We also have a unified bipartisan approach to what is a highly charged partisan issue. Russian activities during 2016 election may have been aimed at one party's candidate, but as my colleague Senator Rubio says frequently, in 2018 and 2020, it could be aimed at anyone at home or abroad. My colleague Senator Warner and I have worked to stay in lockstep on this investigation. We've had our differences on approach at times, but I've constantly stressed that we need to be a team, and I think Senator Warner agrees with me. We must keep these questions above politics and partisanship. It's too important to be tainted by anyone trying to score political points. With that, again, I welcome you, Director, and I turn to the Vice Chairman for any comments he might have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and let me start by again absolutely thanking all the members of the committee for the seriousness in which they've taken on this task. Mr. Comey, thank you for agreeing to come testify as part of this committee's investigation into Russia. I realize that this hearing has been obviously the focus of a lot of Washington in the last few days. But the truth is, many Americans who may be tuning in today probably haven't focused on every twist and turn of the investigation. So I'd like to briefly describe, at least from this senator's standpoint, what we already know and what we're still investigating. To be clear, this investigation is not about relitigating the election. It's not about who won or lost, and it sure as heck is not about Democrats versus Republicans. We're here because a foreign adversary attacked us right here at home, plain and simple, not by guns or missiles, but by foreign operatives seeking to hijack our most important democratic process, our presidential election. Russian spies engaged in a series of online cyber raids and a broad campaign of disinformation, all ultimately aimed at sowing chaos to undermine public faith in our process, in our leadership, and ultimately in ourselves. And that's not just this senator's opinion. It is the unanimous determination of the entire U.S. intelligence community. So we must find out the full story. What the Russians did, and candidly, as some other colleagues have mentioned, why they were so successful. And more importantly, we must determine the necessary steps to take to protect our democracy and ensure they can't do it again. Chairman mentioned elections in 2018 and 2020. In my home state of Virginia, we have elections this year in 2017. Simply put, we cannot let anything or anyone prevent us from getting to the bottom of this. Now, Mr. Comey, let me say at the outset, we haven't always agreed on every issue. In fact, I've occasionally questioned some of the actions you've taken. But I've never had any reason to question your integrity, your expertise, or your intelligence. You've been a straight shooter with this committee and have been willing to speak truth to power, even at the risk of your own career, which makes the way in which you were fired by the president ultimately shocking. Recall we began this entire process with the president and his staff first denying that the Russians were ever involved and then falsely claiming that no one from his team was ever in touch with any Russians. We know that's just not the truth. Numerous Trump associates had undisclosed contacts with Russians before and after the election, including the president's attorney general, his former national security advisor, and his current senior advisor, Mr. Kushner. That doesn't even begin to count the host of additional campaign associates and advisors who've also been caught up in this massive web. We saw Mr. Trump's campaign manager, Mr. Manafort, forced to step down over ties to Russian-backed entities. The National Security Advisor, General Flynn, had to resign over his lies about engagements with the Russians. And we saw the candidate himself express an odd and unexplained affection for the Russian dictator while calling for the hacking of his opponent. There's a lot to investigate. Enough.
I got to interject here. This is a Democrat. Not surprised what he's saying. But excuse me. Trump jokingly, and it was a joke, they lack a sense of humor on the left. Well, maybe the Russians can help us out on finding Hillary's email. That's not calling for the Russians to hack into the DNC. Yes, people in the transition team talk with Russians. They talk to ambassadors of many, many countries. That is expected and done by Democrats and Republicans. It's not unusual. There's no rule here. You can't talk to a Russian. And that's what they seem to say. They try to make it sinister. And Democrats and Republicans routinely talk to the Russians. You got to be careful. And what is the ambassador's job? To make known to senators, representatives, the Russian perspective. And Democrats and Republicans do it routinely. They're trying to make something, a mountain out of molehill. They have not present, they want to give you the impression, oh, they're colluding with the Russians. Well, where's the evidence? A conversation is not colluding. And that's what I've been asking. That's what the American people have been asking. Show us the evidence. They haven't. And what's strange about this conversation and this Intelligence Committee, Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, did you hear anything from the administration, the Obama administration, on the Russians interfering? It was only after Hillary Clinton lost that suddenly the boogeyman, the Russians, became 10 feet tall. Now, I have no doubts that in every election, or nearly every election, the Russians are trying to influence the election. But so is big lie media. They're trying to spin a narrative. Spin means lie. Create a narrative. Narratives are stories. They're fiction. If you have evidence, produce it. The reason they haven't produced it, they don't have the evidence. Now let's continue.
In fact, then Director Comey publicly acknowledged that he was leading an investigation into those links between Mr. Trump's campaign and the Russian government. As the director of the FBI, Mr. Comey was ultimately responsible for conducting that investigation, which might explain why you're sitting now as a private citizen. What we didn't know was at the same time that this investigation was proceeding, the president himself appears to have been engaged in an effort to influence, or at least co-opt, the director of the FBI. The testimony that Mr. Comey has submitted for today's hearing is very disturbing. For example, on January 27th, after summoning Director Comey to dinner, the president appears to have threatened director's job while telling him, quote, "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty." At a later meeting on February 14th, the president asked the attorney general to leave the Oval Office so that he could privately ask Director Comey, again, quote, to see way clear to letting Flynn go. That is a statement that Director Comey interpreted as a request that he drop the investigation connected to General Flynn's false statements. Think about it. The President of the United States asking the FBI director to drop an ongoing investigation. And after that, the President called the FBI.
That's an interpretation, and we'll get into that a little bit later. See, I sort of hope that Donald Trump had this recorded. Now, if he did, whether or not he will release the tapes or make people aware of it remains to be seen. And I think it would reveal a lot. Now, I'm going to skip this. I really clicked on the wrong clip. I want to skip back to the opening remarks of James Comey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Warner, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here to testify today. I've submitted my statement for the record, and I'm not going to repeat it here this morning. I thought I would just offer some very brief introductory remarks, and then I would welcome your questions. When I was appointed FBI director in 2013, I understood that I served at the pleasure of the president.
I'm going to interject. At any time, what that means is at any time, for no reason or any reason, the president, whoever he is, can fire the FBI director. The president is in charge of the executive branch, and the FBI is under the Department of Justice. The chain of command runs from the president to the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, and then to the FBI. So James Comey understands it. A lot of the American people don't understand it, though. And that gets back to my earlier comment. Any president with broad latitude should be able to pick his team. And if he lacks confidence in someone, doesn't trust him, whatever, he can fire him. And in this case, Donald Trump, President Trump, did.
Even though I was appointed to a 10-year term, which Congress created in order to underscore the importance of the FBI being outside of politics and independent, I understood that I could be fired by a president for any reason or for no reason at all. And on May the 9th, when I learned that I had been fired, for that reason, I immediately came home as a private citizen. But then the explanations, the shifting explanations, confused me and increasingly concerned me. They confused me because the president and I had had multiple conversations about my job, both before and after he took office. And he had repeatedly told me I was doing a great job and he hoped I would stay. And I had repeatedly assured him that I did intend to stay and serve out the remaining 6 years of my term. He told me repeatedly that he had talked to lots of people about me, including our current Attorney General, and had learned that I was doing a great job and that I was extremely well liked by the FBI workforce. So it confused me when I saw on television the president saying that he actually fired me because of the Russia investigation, and learned again from the media that he was telling privately other parties that my firing had relieved great pressure on the Russia investigation. I was also confused by the initial explanation that was offered publicly, that I was fired because of the decisions I had made during the election year.
Now, let me interject here. I could see where he's confused, and they did change their story, the president and his administration. Initially, as the former FBI director is indicating, the reason given for his firing and prepared by the deputy attorney general was his mishandling, in my opinion, and in the deputy attorney general's, of the 5 July press conference, in which he went over the evidence that they had on Hillary Clinton. And I've played it on at least 2 or 3 shows here. I'm not playing it now. Where most people, if you listen to it, up until the last roughly 45, 50 seconds, you would have thought he was going to recommend that they indict her and charge her. And suddenly says, no, we're not. No reasonable prosecutor would go forward with the case. Well, there are many prosecutors, reasonable or not, that would go forward with the case. And two, really rewrote the law saying that you had to prove intent in regarding to the mishandling of classified documents, which is not the law. You don't have to improve intent. Intent is hard to prove. I thought it was misleading the American public, and I thought it was, he didn't do the right thing. What was the right thing to do? First of all, it's not his call, and this needs to be emphasized, and that's what the deputy attorney general was saying. It is not the FBI investigates, collects evidence, turns the evidence over to the Department of Justice, the attorneys, the prosecutors working there, and it's up to the prosecutor to determine whether or not they're going to go forward, call a grand jury, present the evidence, and indict her or not. It's not his decision to make. Think of the FBI as the police. The police do not prosecute cases. They provide the evidence. It's the local district attorney that has to make a decision. Do we have a case here? Do we have the evidence? It's the Department of Justice decision. It's not the FBI decision. And that's where he was out of line. And I would have thought at the time that the president would have fired him. They weren't going to do that because it left. What was the key thing result of that press conference? Hillary Clinton was no longer under investigation. He was closing the investigation. That cleared the way for her to get the nomination and run. It was critical. You don't want the candidate for any party to be under investigation by the FBI. And up until that 5 July press conference, she was. And if they truly had completed the investigation, he should have handed the evidence over to the Department of Justice with or without a recommendation as to whether or not to prosecute. And then it's the determination of the Department of Justice, the attorneys it's assigned to make the decision. But the fix was in. They were not going to prosecute her. And that's why he held, and I'm sort of jumping ahead, the reason why he did this, he saw on television, as I did and many of you, that Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, met with Bill Clinton. It gave the entire wrong appearance. Let's continue.
That didn't make sense to me for a whole bunch of reasons, including the time and all the water that had gone under the bridge since those hard decisions that had to be made. That didn't make any sense to me. And although the law required no reason at all to fire an FBI director, the administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader.
Many in the FBI did lose confidence in its leader. See, there's some agents that agree with the FBI director and some that don't. I understand why he's sensitive about this, but there are many very disappointed FBI agents that did not agree with what the FBI director did on 5 July.
Those were lies, plain and simple.
He's calling them a lie. He might be right. And let me continue. I don't trust Donald Trump. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I didn't vote for anyone because I didn't think any of them were qualified. And I didn't trust either of them. If I can't trust a candidate, I'm not going to vote for him. Now, if If I had to decide between two, Hillary and Trump, yeah, I'd vote Trump, reluctantly, holding my nose. But I didn't have any candidate. I'm not a Republican or Democrat. I believe in limited government, and both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are big government parties. They can't balance a budget to save their lives, and the biggest problem facing the United States today is not the Russians. It's the Congress that can't control government spending. Now, they want to use the Russians. The Russians are coming. They're interfering. And I believe you should check it out. I understand that. But they always have been doing that. As the same can be said for the United States and many countries through the CIA. President Obama actually interfered with the Israeli election. Foreign governments interfere or try to influence elections. It's been going on for many, many years, and it will continue, as does the media. And the majority of the media in this country supported Barack Obama twice and Hillary Clinton. They're primary liberal progressives that support the Democratic agenda and the candidate.
So sorry that the FBI workforce had to hear them, and I'm so sorry that the American people were told them. I worked every day at the FBI to help make that great organization better. And I say help because I did nothing alone at the FBI. There are no indispensable people at the FBI. The organization's great strength is that its values and abilities run deep and wide. The FBI will be fine without me. The FBI's mission will be relentlessly pursued by its people, and that mission is to protect the American people and uphold the Constitution of the United States. I will deeply miss being part of that mission, but this organization and its mission will go on long beyond me and long beyond any particular administration. I have a message before I close for my former colleagues of the FBI. But at first, I want the American people to know this truth. The FBI is honest. The FBI is strong. And the FBI is and always will be independent. And now to my former colleagues, if I may.
Now, I want to interject something here. J. Edgar Hoover. What did he do? He collected leverage, dirt, blackmail material on many people, mostly politicians. This is before the establishment of the National Security Agency. And he ran it, and it was politicized. And some presidents he got along with, and some presidents wanted to fire him, but everyone was afraid of him. That FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover had information that would embarrass senators, congressmen, cabinet officials, and even presidents. And that's why he kept his job so long. Now, Congress, in its wisdom, said, we don't want this again. This needs to stop. And it largely has stopped in terms of the FBI. But the National Security Agency, in my mind, is a much more dangerous situation because they are automatically collecting everything they can across the world, but also including the United States. And all it takes is a president or a few people working under him to target people, get leverage, dirt on them. And I've heard reports that that's what they're doing. They're building dossier on senators and representatives. That's scary. See, Congress has a role here, the oversight role. And they're afraid of some of these people and organizations. And we've had the media refuses to really cover the story that Barack Obama abused his power as president and targeted American citizens, including Republican candidates, and misuse the product, the information that the various agencies, there are 17 agencies in the so-called intelligence community, but the big one is the National Security Agency. And he had people working under him, including the National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, unmasking people, and then distributing the unmasked results to people in the community. I didn't hear the Democrats talk about that. I have not heard, with the exception of Fox and talk radio, your major television networks, talk about that. This is a scandal many orders of magnitude greater than Watergate ever was. And this committee has oversight responsibility for it. And remember, it was the first FBI director, the one that, I forget how many years, but it was at least 40, 50 years as FBI director. He died in office. That had his files, dossiers, not on servers that the NSA has them on, but in folders in his office locked up. So he could use leverage to get what he wanted. Now let's listen to James Comey.
I am so sorry that I didn't get the chance to say goodbye to you properly. It was the honor of my life to serve beside you, to be part of the FBI family, and I will miss it for the rest of my life. Thank you for standing watch. Thank you for doing so much good for this country. Do that good as long as ever you can. And senators, I look forward to your questions.
Now, I want to interject another comment. And I said this at the time, so I'm not changing my opinion. I thought the way that the FBI director was fired was mishandled. What happened? Apparently, a letter was carried over to the FBI office. But the FBI director was giving a speech out in California. He found out that he was fired because he was giving a speech. They had the television in the room. At first, he thought it was a joke. The people he was talking to thought it was a joke. He learned it through a television newscast. Now, I don't think it was intended, but that's not the point. This was not, if Donald Trump has the right to fire anybody he wants in his administration, but he needs to learn a lesson here. There's a proper way to fire people, and there is an improper way. This is the improper way. He should have called the FBI director over to his office and fired him there. In other words, learn of his firing directly from the president. He didn't do that. That would have been the classy way to do it. There's no good way to fire people. But he deserved that minimum amount of respect. And I was critical of Trump doing that. And so were other people. It's not new to me. So I fully understand that the president can fire him. And so does James Comey. It was the way it was done. And they could have talked. It didn't have to be a long conversation. He could have briefly told him directly, face to face, here's why I'm firing you. And a lot of this could have been avoided. Now, I'm going to skip. I'm not going to continue direct in, but I'm going to jump around to various questions. And one of the important series of questions, each senator gets 7 minutes, by the way, Democrats and Republicans. This is Senator Risch of Indiana, Republican.
Senator Risch.
Thank you very much. Mr. Comey, thank you for your service. America needs more like you, and we really appreciate it. Yesterday, I got, and everybody got, the 7 pages of your direct testimony that's now a part of the record here. And the first, I read it, then I read it again, and all I could think was, number one, how much I hated the class of legal writing when I was in law school. And you were the guy that probably got the A after reading this. So I find it clear, I find it concise, having been a prosecutor for a number of years and handling 100, maybe thousands of cases and read police reports, investigative reports, this is as good as it gets, and I really appreciate that. Not only the conciseness and the clearness of it, but also the fact that you have things that were written down contemporaneously when they happened, and you actually put them in quotes, so we know exactly what happened, and we're not getting some rendition of it that's in your mind. So,
thank you.
So you're to be complimented.
I had great parents and great teachers who beat that into me.
That's obvious, sir. The chairman walked you through a number of things that the American people need to know and want to know. Number one, obviously, we all know about the active measures that the Russians have taken. I think a lot of people were surprised at this. Those of us that work in the intelligence community, it didn't come as a surprise. But now the American people know this, and it's good they know this, because this is serious and it's a problem. I think, secondly, I gather from all this that you're willing to say now that while you were director, the President of the United States was not under investigation. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
All right. So that's a fact that we can rely on at this
point. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Now I want to emphasize this. He told the president he wasn't under investigation. Not once, but several times, and he's repeating it here. And that's what Donald Trump said. Did you know that? Many people don't know that basic fact. Keep that in mind.
I remember you talked with us shortly after February 14th when the New York Times wrote an article that suggested that the Trump campaign was colluding with the Russians. You remember reading that article when it first came out?
I do. It was about allegedly extensive electronic surveillance.
Correct.
Communications. Yes.
And that upset you to the point where you actually went out and surveyed the intelligence community to see whether you were missing something in that. Is that correct?
That's correct. I want to be careful in open setting.
I'm not going to go any further than that.
Okay.
So thank you. In addition to that, after that, you sought out both Republican and Democrat senators to tell them that, hey, I don't know where this is coming from, but this is not the case. This is not factual. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me emphasize, what's President Trump's big complaint? We have fake news. This is the New York Times publishing fake news, a narrative, a story, fiction. And it's fiction. That's how low the New York Times has gone. It's a liberal, progressive rag that's now a propaganda sheet.
So again, the American people can understand this. That report by the New York Times was not true. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, in the main, it was not true. And again, all of you know this, maybe the American people don't. The challenge, and I'm not picking on reporters, about writing stories about classified information is the people talking about it often don't really know what's going on. And those of us who actually know what's going on are not talking about it. And we don't call the press to say, hey, you got that thing wrong about this sensitive topic. We just have to leave it there. I mentioned to the chairman the nonsense around what influenced me to make the July 5th statement. Nonsense, but I can't go explaining how it's nonsense.
Thank you. All right, so those three things we now know regarding the active measures with the president's under investigation and the collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. I want to drill right down, as my time is limited, to the most recent dust-up regarding allegations that the president of the United States obstructed justice. And boy, you nailed this down on page 5, paragraph 3. You put this in quotes. Words matter. You wrote down the words so we can all have the words in front of us now. There's 28 words there that are in quotes, and it says, quote, I hope, this is the president speaking, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go. Now, those are his exact words. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you wrote them here and you put them in quotes?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for that. He did not direct you to let it go.
Not in his words, no.
He did not order you to let it go.
Again, those words are not an order.
No. He said, I hope. Now, like me, you probably did hundreds of cases, maybe thousands of cases, charging people with criminal offenses. And of course, you have knowledge of the thousands of cases out there that where people have been charged. Do you know of any case where a person has been charged for obstruction of justice, or for that matter, any other criminal offense, where this they said or thought they hoped for an outcome?
I don't know well enough to answer. And the reason I keep saying his words is I took it as a direction.
Right.
I mean, this is the President of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as this is what he wants me to do. Now, I didn't obey that, but that's the way I took it.
You may have taken it as a direction, but that's not what he said.
Correct.
That's important. And what the senator's leading up to, there's no obstruction of justice. We have big lie media, most of them lying lunatic leftists that appear on network television. Oh, it's obstruction of justice, blah, blah, blah. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't have a clue. They're lying. That's what I call them, lying lunatic left, for a reason. They lie, they lie, they lie. It's not ignorance. The president, it doesn't even come close to obstruction of justice. And that's what the senator's trying to get across.
He said,
I hope.
Those are exact words, okay. Correct.
You don't know of anyone that's ever been charged for hoping something. Is that a fair statement?
I don't as I sit here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Now I want to have a... To be fair and balanced here, the California senator asking the question.
Rector is not feeling as if they're serving with political loyalty owed to any particular person. The statue of justice has a blindfold on because you're not supposed to be peeking out to see whether your patron is pleased or not with what you're doing. It should be about the facts and the law. That's why I became FBI director, to be in that kind of position. So that's why I was so uneasy.
Well, let me move on. My time's running out. February 14th, again, it seems a bit strange. You were in a meeting, And your direct superior, the Attorney General, was in that meeting as well. Yet the President asked everyone to leave, including the Attorney General to leave, before he brought up the matter of General Flynn.
A couple of points here. I need to make two corrections. This is Senator Warner from Virginia, and I misidentified the state Senator Risch is from. He's from Idaho, not Indiana. Let's continue with Senator Warner.
Attorney General knew he shouldn't be leaving, which is why he was lingering. And I don't know Mr. Kushner well, but I think he picked up on the same thing. And so I knew something was about to happen that I needed to pay very close attention to.
And I found it very interesting that in the memo that you wrote after this February 14th pull-aside, you made clear that you wrote that memo in a way that was unclassified. If you affirmatively made the decision to write a memo that was unclassified, was that because you felt at some point the facts of that meeting would have to come clean and come clear and actually be able to be cleared in a way that could be shared with the American people?
Well, I remember thinking this is a very disturbing development, really important to our work. I need to document it and preserve it in a way, this committee gets this, but sometimes when things are classified, it tangles them up. It's hard to share it within an investigative team. You have to be very careful about how you handle it for good reason. So my thinking was, if I write it in such a way that I don't include anything that would trigger a classification, that'll make it easier for us to discuss within the FBI and the government and to hold on to it in a way that makes it accessible to us.
Well, again, it's our hope, particularly since you're a pretty knowledgeable guy and you wrote this in a way that was unclassified, that this committee will get access to that unclassified document. I think it would be very important to our investigation. Let me just ask this in closing. How many ongoing investigations at any time does the FBI have?
Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands.
That's an important number. I'm glad Senator Warner asked this question. There are many, many, many investigations. That's one of the reasons they don't comment on it. And you need to understand, they investigate. I just got the signal. I got to wrap it up. They investigate. Many times, people are not aware of it because they don't charge them. And that's important to understand. Now, I want to continue with, I'm going to do one more of these. I want to play what Marco Rubio said about collusion. Let's play this.
Director Comey, the meeting in the Oval Office where he made the request about Mike Flynn, was that the only time he asked you to hopefully let it go?
Yes.
And in that meeting, as you understood it, he was asking not about the general Russia investigation. He was asking very specifically about the jeopardy that Flynn was in himself.
That's how I understood it. Yes, sir.
And as you perceived it, while it was a request that you hoped you did away with it, you perceived it as an order, given his position, the setting, and the like, and some of the circumstances.
Yes.
At the time, did you say anything to the president about that is not an appropriate request, or did you tell the White House counsel that is not an appropriate request, someone needs to go tell the president that he can't do these things?
I didn't, no.
Okay. Why?
I don't know. I think, as I said earlier, I think the circumstances were such that I was a bit stunned and didn't have the presence of mind. And I don't know, you know, I don't want to make you sound like I'm Captain Courageous. I don't know whether, even if I had the presence of mind, I would have said to the president, sir, that's wrong. I don't know whether I would have.
Okay.
But in the moment, it didn't come to my mind. What came to my mind is, be careful what you say. And so I said, I agree, Flynn is a good guy.
So on the cloud, we keep talking about this cloud, you perceive the cloud to be the Russian investigation in general.
Yes, sir. Right?
But the specific ask was that you would tell the American people but what you had already told him, you had already told the leaders of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, that he was not personally under investigation.
Yes, sir.
In fact, he was asking you to do what you have done here today.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Okay.
This is an important point, and Trump has said this, and Comey is confirming it. He did not ask to shut down the Russian investigation at all. As a matter of fact, he wants it to go forward. What he specifically asked was the investigation into Michael Flynn, which is a much narrower, and it's understandable, and why the director thought it was, and I probably would have thought too, when someone, it's like a suggestion from a commanding officer. They're not suggestions, they're commands. But he didn't order them. Now, one final thing related to why he did the 5 July, and then I have to wrap it up.
Very briefly, to the decision to publicly go out with your results on the email, was your decision influenced by the Attorney General's tarmac meeting with the former President Bill Clinton?
Yes, in a ultimately conclusive way, that was the thing that capped it for me, that I had to do something separately to protect the credibility of the investigation, which meant both the FBI and the Justice Department.
Were there other things that contributed to that that you can describe in an open session?
There were other things that contributed to that. One significant item I can't, I know the committee's been briefed on. There's been some public accounts of it which are nonsense, but I understand the committee's been briefed on the classified facts. Probably the only other consideration that I guess I can talk about in open setting is that at one point the Attorney General had directed me not to call it an investigation, but instead to call it a matter, which confused me and concerned me. But that was one of the bricks in the load that led me to conclude I have to step away from the department if we're to close this case credibly.
See, the fix was in, folks. Loretta Lynch was the fix. And that's what forced him, in his mind, to have to, on 5 July, go forward. I'm glad he did. And the American people decided on Election Day they don't trust Hillary Clinton. But he paid a price. He lost his job. Now I have to close out the show with my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.